director of the Electronic Frontiers Forums track at DragonCon, and this is the 18 USC 2257 panel, and we want to talk a little bit about censorship this time. And this is one of the more serious panels. I'd like to, if somebody here could just talk about, you know, briefly for a minute or so, what it is and why we're concerned about this. And I'll do the introductions after that, but if we could introduce the law itself, first of all. Who's the best person to start with here?
Sure.
Okay. I'm Annalee Newitz. I'm from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and I'm going to tell you about this particular regulation. Okay, so basically, 2257 has been recently amended, which is to say the law has been somewhat expanded, and what it is record-keeping requirements for adult websites. The record-keeping requirements were set in place in the early 90s for a good reason, which is making sure that adult sites are not using people under the age of 18 in their images. And I think we can all agree that that's a great thing. However, under the new Gonzales regime, actually this was started under Ashcroft, these requirements have been expanded so that anyone who has sexually explicit material on their website, and we'll go into how sexually explicit is defined in a minute because there's a lot of ins and outs to that, as it were. puns will be flying. So basically, the new regulations state that if you have sexually explicit material, you must, you as the webmaster, must, hello, this is our other panelist, you must provide documentation proving that every single person in those images is over the age of 18. And what that basically means is you need to keep some kind of Xerox or something of everyone's driver's license on record at your business if they are appearing in any of these sexually explicit photos, and you have to keep that for 7 years. This is for any photo that or representation that was created after 1995. So there's two reasons why this is heinous. Actually, there's several more than two. One is you have to keep every single one of these photos or streams, if you're doing streaming video, on file, which is a tremendous burden for a lot of small businesses to just have to keep that volume of crap. Because if you're doing some kind of live feed with girls who are stripping or guys who are stripping, that may be a lot of terabytes of data. The other thing is then you have to keep these records on file. You have to make those records available in a public place. There has to be an address prominently displayed on your website saying where law enforcement officers can go to examine these records. You have to have at least 20 hours a week in that place with you there, open to any law enforcement officer who chooses to come in and look through them. They don't have to have a warrant. They don't have to have a subpoena. All they have to do is show up, show you their relevant ID proving that they're from law enforcement, and say, I want to look through all your records. In other words, they'll be able to look at get all the real names of all your performers from those records. And the other piece of that is under the new 2257 regulations, if you are what's called a secondary publisher, which is to say if I want to, say, republish one of Amy's images on my website, I didn't create those images, I have nothing to do with the people who are in those images, I also have to keep those records now. So say I have a website where I write stuff about porn, which happens to be true. Yay, we like to write about porn. And I want to duplicate an image from another site, and so I've gotten permission from the webmaster. I've said, I'm going to write an essay about this picture on your site. And they say, fine. Well, now I also have to get this information, this private information about the people in the picture. So I think anyone privacy conscious or who's ever been stalked can imagine how this could be abused. You could say, hi, I'm a website, and I'm hoping to duplicate your picture, and I really need the real name and all that information of the performer who's in that picture to comply with the law. So I think you can connect the dot on what would happen there. So there's a lot of privacy implications for people who perform in adult or sexually explicit images or on websites. I think I've gotten all the heinous parts of it down, so I think we can move on.
Okay, I wanted to ask the other panelists to introduce themselves and give us a brief description of how this law would, or how this regulation would affect you.
Hi, I'm Tatsumi, and I was the art director of a BDSM-oriented magazine in out of New York City called Prometheus. And while everything that Annalie said is certainly true, I'd like to point out that it doesn't just apply to websites. This
That's right.
is something that applies to movies. It applies to merchandise. I mean, the box your vibrator comes in is subject to this regulation. Magazines, catalogs, it's the entire adult industry. And it's not just porn. I mean, standard S&M fare, just like spanking, completely clothed, counts for this Title 18, subsection 2257.
Hi. Hi, my name is Kiska Baker, known as Ma'at on Peninsula SPQR, which is an online MUD that is geared towards adults only. It does have some themes of BDSM, as well as, you know, gladiatorial matches and et cetera, based on 50 AD Rome. How this affects us is many people, they send in a picture of themselves or a likeness of themselves or something that they think they their character would look like. Some of these images can be fairly explicit. So as administrators, we would have to also keep those records, even as a nonprofit organization.
I am Mistress. I operate a webcam site, and I also do professional domination in Charlotte, North Carolina. And the way this is affecting me is I've been a private webcam girl for years. And now, thanks to 2257, I have to prominently display on my website my real full name, my real street address, my real phone number. And as you can imagine, this scares the living crap out of me because I don't know who's going to show up at my door. I mean, what if somebody saw me taking my clothes off on the internet or saw me playing with a client on the internet, which I do, and decides to show up at the house? Or, as it's been pointed out, I live in a very conservative area of the country. What if I wake up some morning and there are protesters outside my house? It's not outside the realm of possibility if they know where I live. So to me, this is a very personal thing. And by the way, my websites are not for profit. I don't charge anything. My sites are completely free. So I'm not making any money off this. It's a labor of love for me. Obviously, I do make money off the dominatrix business, but that's really, you know, anybody can come to my websites, anybody can look at my images, and I'm getting absolutely no profit from any of it. So, but this still affects me, and it scares the crap out of me, which is why I suggested this panel for this track, because I wanted more information about this, what could happen, and how it can affect other people.
I'm Scott McGowan. I write iOnAdult.com, which is an adult news and commentary website. The parent company that actually owns the website is AEBN, which stands for Adult Entertainment Broadcast Network. And we are the largest provider in the world of VOD movies on the internet. I think at present we're approaching a little over 40,000 movies that we have, their full-length titles. So needless to say, the record-keeping issues for us as a secondary producer is pretty burdensome. And for myself, I've, you know, covered this quite a bit. You know, I speak to the people over at the Free Speech Coalition every now and then, who are the folks that are heading up the challenge to these new regulations. And so I guess while I personally don't publish a lot of explicit images on my site, if any, right now. I don't even think you could find a single tit on it right now because of this. But it's something that I cover. It's something that I hear about every day. And so that's where I'm coming from here.
Did they tell you stop putting tits on the site?
Actually, this we didn't actually create Ion Adult until a couple of months ago.
Okay.
This is a relatively new entity, and so I didn't want to do it anyway from the get go. I didn't want to have explicit images on there because I wanted it to be a work safe website. Despite the fact that it deals with the adult industry and adult actresses, and you know, you name it. I wanted it to be, despite the foul language that I use on the site, which is really, really fucking foul. It's not the type of thing that I wanted people to be able to surf it from work, and therefore, you know, it's more traffic during the day for somebody like me, which is kind of tough to get for adult industry websites.
I actually modified a couple of our websites. When these new regulations came out, I was working with a gentleman sitting in the audience who went ahead and took down all of the nude images. We only have non-nudes on, two of our sites now. And because of the secondary producer crap, we are only doing non-nudes and then linking text links to where you can go find the nudes, because the webmaster who produced that content originally is probably the only people who are going to hang on to that young lady's driver's license.
I'm kind of in the same situation. I'm doing text links and things like that over to not safe for work sites. That's what I call them. In other words, that's where you can find the tits or anything else for that matter. Honestly, at this point, I have no reason to have to deal with this garbage as far as the record keeping is concerned. I can if I want, and it's really, for somebody like me, it wouldn't be all that hard. But for the company that I work for, my parent company, AEBN, it's one of those things where, I mean, can you imagine the records that would have to be kept for over 40,000 streaming videos, full-length streaming videos? So we'll say that each movie contains a total of anywhere from 4 to 6 scenes. Each scene will have anywhere from 2 to 3 performers. And then you do the math on that and try to figure out, wow, okay, this is going to be a lot of data to store. And a lot of this is on paper, too. That's the thing. A lot of people don't understand this. They're trying to do it digitally, but what they have over on the West Coast, in the adult industry, when they film these things, up until recently, they didn't do it digitally. They've got file cabinets that, would fill up this room. Especially some of the bigger companies like Metro and Wicked that, are putting out, bukus of movies per year, especially the Gonzo companies. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that term, but it's more of a kind of a low-end, perspective type of thing where you've got the cameraman and you don't have a lot of, storyline and stuff like that. It's not even the pizza guy, it's not even that kind of thing. And they're cranking out 2 or 3 titles a week. It's not like they're coming out with something every month. They're cranking out 2 or 3 a week, and it adds up quick. So that's the burdensome part of the record keeping.
And also, if I understand it correctly, with the record keeping, particularly for a situation like you, you also have to have them cataloged by any name, any assumed name
that they
could have ever performed under. You have to keep it on a separate hard drive. You can't even keep these records in the same, like on your same computer that you do your work from. It all has to be a certain way, and the penalties are very high. What is it, five to ten years.
Offense, and then a 2-year, minimum 2-year for your second offense, plus fines.
And that's like a mandatory prison sentence, because you wanted to put tits on your website.
To be reasonable.
And one of the pernicious things about this, too, is, not only is it what you're talking about for the company having to keep the records, but then, of course, there's the whole issue for the performers as well, because this is a much greater commitment now for them in terms of revealing who they are when they make these films. There's a reason why, lots of people when they're young, well, maybe not lots of people, but a percentage of people when they're young take on an assumed name and act in a couple of, porn movies, or they're in websites or whatever, and then later it doesn't affect them because they've done it under an assumed name, and that's fine. They can sort of leave it behind, or they can go on and do other things that are unrelated to the adult industry. But now you've got this detailed record with your real name attached to any stage names, in the possession not only for 7 years of the original producer, and then if they've sold off what you've done to some other secondary publisher, that your records are then spread all over the place. You have no control over who's going to have access to that data, including law enforcement. Because, of course, law enforcement can drop in any time and look through the records for any reason at all. There doesn't have to be a reason. They don't have to say, well, we suspect such and such. They can just stop in. So I think it really, there's going to be a tremendous chilling effect on anyone's willingness to be involved in sexual expression of any kind, either as a performer or somebody who's putting themselves out there to put, you know, their own webcam up on the web, or companies that want to sell movies. So it's really, really undermines people's ability to do that.
Actually, I have a little update. This is right now they're in an injunction process. The Free Speech Coalition, which is an industry advocacy group, they got some really great attorneys over there. One worth noting is H. Lewis Sirkin. He's the guy, I don't know if you ever saw the Frontline episode with Rob Black from Extreme Associates. He's the guy that represented him, and he's pretty much all but got the feds beat at this point. Louis's also the kind of guy, he doesn't go out drinking all night with porn people either, you know, unlike some attorneys. And he's a guy that goes, he shows up, does his job, and goes home. But they've been in an injunction process now for a couple of months. And the idea is they don't want this law to be able to be enforced while it's still tied up in the courts. The Free Speech Coalition filed suit almost immediately challenging the law. The good news is they came to an agreement, I believe it was back in June, that said, okay, we're not going to enforce this. The FSC and the US DOJ said, no, we're not going to enforce this. Okay, until we can get an injunction hearing on this, on whether or not we're really going to enforce it, until this plays out in the courts, which really could be a couple of years, realistically. I said, okay, we're going to say, you know, we're not going to enforce it until we get a real injunction hearing. Well, it didn't really happen like that, and it's been extended another 30 days. And this is all going on in the US District Court of Colorado.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's
by
true.
A certain date too.
Yeah, and so if you if you haven't joined the FSC by now, then you will not be protected under the injunction. So,
but there is an interesting thing that goes along with that. They were not able to turn over the list of, you know, who was a member of FSC. The judge said, no, we're not going to do that, because essentially what that says is, okay, they can go down the list and go, is this yes, 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 no, let's hit them. It's not really fair. So what they did instead is they gave a list of FSC members to a third party, and then they said, okay, if you want to go after somebody, you got to check with these guys first. So it did throw some red tape and a monkey wrench in that process. So even if you're not a member of FSC, I wouldn't worry too much. I don't think they're going to go for it. I really don't.
But they could.
They could. Conceivably, they could.
I think the fact that they could, I mean, that's what we mean when we say a chilling effect, because I don't think that people are willing to risk it because the stakes are so high. So why would you put yourself out there facing such an incredible prison sentence? So, you know, it's still definitely a danger. And I know the thing that's really problematic is that the law actually says this is only supposed to apply to commercial websites, but commercial anything, publication websites, I need to keep, I deal with the internet so much that I only think about that. Any publication that's commercial. However, the way that commercial is defined is so broad that essentially even a free publication, if there's like a couple ads in there, that could possibly be considered commercial. If you have like a webcam and you have a couple like Google ads down the side, if you're selling t-shirts, that could make you commercial. So in fact, it really doesn't, there really is no limitation. And so I know a lot of people who have non-commercial websites that have just taken them down because they don't want to risk it.
I think theoretically, if you have an Amazon wish list, you may be able to technically be considered a...
Yeah, it's very...
Seriously.
The definition is actually quite capacious, so, yeah.
When you say commercial publications, you mean anything printed for profit, be it video or audio or...
That's right, yeah.
Across the board.
Yeah, this is it basically applies to, I think that the term they use is publication, and then they kind of define it in great detail. Maybe we can find that in our...
I think it's enterprise.
Enterprise, okay.
I think it's enterprise, but I don't believe it applies to audio.
But printed material, right?
Any kind of printed material. It's covers mail order, retailers, like a website shipping things. Producers, manufacturers.
Yeah, here they say book, magazine, periodical, film, videotape, computer-generated image, digital image, or picture, or other similar matter.
Other similar matter is
later I think visual depictions can sum it up.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, text doesn't count, I think. Text only.
Well, no, text Text does count because
text.
Live chat is now has to be, you have to make sure that the people in the chat room are over 18.
But that's just kind of typical, you know, yes, you're over 18 and, you know, it's legal in your state to view this. I don't think it really has, goes into 2257. I could be wrong
you
about that.
You don't have the driver's license of everybody in the
state. Right.
Right. You just have, yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah, I had a question. Now, this would apply to people who are making your typical porn film.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, the distributor.
No, not the distributor. Only so the distributor is not liable. It's the person who made the film, okay. And then if you are considered to be republishing it, which is where a lot of the stuff around the internet comes in, because lots of people will republish or will repost a film or repost a photo. But if you're just distributing, that's all you're doing. You're not displaying. Then you're not liable.
Oh, actually, that's not what the FSC says. Mm-hmm. The FSC says no package portraying actual sexually explicit activity, which is later defined, can be sold unless the packaging has a label which reads the Title 18 disclaimer. So if the Title 18 disclaimer is not perfect, the mom and pop shop can get sued and put in jail. And so they have to actually look through every box that they sell and make sure that the disclaimers are accurate.
Well, for distribution essentially for this purpose means that you're the person that is selling the material to the video stores or something to that effect. If you have if I have a studio, you know, I'm, you know, triple X rated videos, and I don't have the power to, like, for instance, I don't know everyone in the world, so I go through X distributor. It's still entirely on me. The distributor itself that says, hey, they're basically selling the videos to the video stores or, you know, Amazon.com or whomever.
But if they sell to an end user, they are liable to make sure that the labeling is accurate and compliant.
Oh, sure, but they don't have to have the records. They just have to,
correct.
Yeah.
Right. They don't have to have the records, but they do have to check the records to make sure that they're compliant.
You said computer-generated image. Now, the way I read that, it seems like later on it also said something about depictions of an actual event. You know, so like simulated sex might or might not be.
Simulated sex is not covered by this. So not there's no, we're not talking Photoshop.
Right, so a completely computer-generated image obviously doesn't represent an actual
A computer-generated image is fine because it's simulated. Cartoons are fine because they're simulated. This only applies to actual sex. So, like, if you're an R-rated movie where Tom Cruise is pretending to be straight or whatever, totally fine.
Well, that actually also goes into another court case that occurred. I think this was about, maybe 3 or 4 years ago. I think it was Sundance versus the state of Florida.
That's right, yeah.
Essentially what that said is that if it's some sort of simulation, or let's just say you've got, like that guy that just walked in the door. Let's just say that we said that guy was 16 years old. You know, he's on camera saying, I'm 16 years old, and I'm getting ready to have sex with this girl, you know. Simulation of that sort doesn't fall into that either. You can't be, I mean, as long as you have the record on file that says, yeah, this person was over 18, it doesn't, you know. Now, there are some gray areas there that are going to cause you trouble, and that's if you've got some girl that's, 18, 19 years old, and she looks like she's 14, saying, I've got the biggest boobies in 8th grade, then, yeah, you're going to get inspected, so you better be squeaky clean. But you've got other things that, that everybody's just going to look at and go, right, okay.
If I'm a distributor and all I do is buy stuff and ship it to somebody else, and I'm not, in effect, displaying any of that to the public, then that's fine.
That's correct.
But if then I take out an ad showing a sexually explicit box cover in the back of Playboy,
yes.
Then
yes.
But that's the advertising, not the distributing, that's causing.
Yes, exactly.
It's republishing the image. So actually, you would have to have.
Actually, the burden would be on Playboy. Like if you mentioned if it's in the back of Playboy,
well,
they'd have to have the records.
So I'd have
yeah, but they yeah. exactly they'd have to get them from him.
Exactly.
Yeah, they would be the republisher.
And if I
that's right.
That ad, since I did the layout for the ad and gave it to them, I'm probably a primary producer of that ad.
Me? Right? Yeah, of
yeah.
that ad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've composited it from four boxes.
Well, it also says
however,
that if
you would have had to have gotten that information from whoever created the movie, right? So you would have called them, and then Playboy would call you. Or you might refer it back to the original. But you can see how, again, like getting back to the privacy issue, how something like this could turn into a scam for somebody who wanted to stalk a girl in a movie. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm putting together an ad for Playboy. I really need her information, like where she lives and her real name. And so, I mean, it's really...
Well, most of these images are bought and sold. Essentially, the way it works is, let's just say that... I'm a webmaster and I want content. There are tons of content providers out there. And, you know, anybody who's done just about anything over the past, or we'll say since the proliferation of the internet and digital copies of these things, you know, that's when, you know, you really start to see this kind of spider web effect. But it's so easy. I mean, I can throw something together on GeoCities and call, you know, soandsocontent.com and say, I want to buy the picture sets of this girl, this girl, this girl, this girl, this girl. And along with those picture sets comes the driver's license or, you know, the college ID or whatever. And that goes into something else, actually, and I'll let you talk about if you like, mm-hmm. The type of identification that now has to be used.
And also, didn't you have a question?
Yeah, you were talking about, I'm taking this more in the print. So if somebody, and this is anything that's described sexually explicit.
Yeah, so do we want to go into a definition of that?
Yeah, I have it here. I bet all of us have it in front of us.
Right.
But So the definition of sexually explicit comes from Title 18, Section 2256, helpfully, right before 2257. And it means... actual sexual intercourse, including genital-genital, oral-genital, anal-genital, oral-anal, whether between persons of the same or opposite sex. They don't mention anal-anal because I guess no one's figured out how to do that yet. no bestiality, no masturbation, no sadistic or masochistic abuse. I shouldn't say no because those are all the things that are included. Now, an area of contestation right now under sexually explicit conduct is whether it includes lascivious exhibition of the genitals or pubic area of any person, meaning basically any cheesecake
spread
or beefcake.
Right?
Yeah, just any nude picture.
Yeah.
So the government has issued an affirmance, which is kind of a legal term for just saying, yes, they say that on the record that they won't or will do something. They've said that they won't go after sites just for the lascivious exhibition of genitals. However, an affirmance has very shaky legal standing.
Well, I was going to say, they haven't changed 2256 yet.
They haven't, exactly. They haven't changed. Well, and 2256 is just sort of where it's actually a law, part of the law for having to do with child porn. So it's kind of weird that they're even using this definition at all. But they haven't changed 2257. They haven't changed 2256. All we have is this affirmance, which is basically them saying, like, well, we promise that we won't. So it's pretty shaky.
Well, yeah. Speaking of child porn, I mean, 2257 is only really in existence to protect children. It's supposed to be to make sure that everyone is over 18.
Right.
That's the government's defense.
Which is pretty laughable for the most part because it has
really
not in any way stopped the proliferation of child pornography.
And as was pointed out, Tracy Lords, when she made those movies, she would have been compliant with this law. The paperwork
ID
she provided, the IDs she provided, was issued by a state and would have in fact allowed her to work. So it would not have protected her at all. Mm-hmm. So what's the point?
And the fact is, you know,
really, it's horrible.
The fact is, when you look at it from my, you know, I deal with a lot of industry people. I've gotten an opportunity to do a good bit of interviews and things like that. These guys aren't interested in shooting people under 18. The biggest part of the adult industry is not interested in the least in shooting people under 18 years old, because they don't have to go there to get these people. You know, they've got people beating down their doors to be in their movies, and so they don't have to seek out children. They've got plenty of young adults that are willing to get in this business, do three films, you know, do a bunch of coke, and then split. You know, and I don't mean to, I'm not trying to demean anybody in saying that, but that is kind of an old tale. So it's in that sense, you know, the legit guys, they don't want anybody under 18. But the guys that are throwing images out on Kazaa or on servers over in, you know, overseas or in South America or things like that, those
people,
are guys you have to worry about. And they're not going to be compliant.
They're not complying to the Title 18 stuff anyway.
Yeah.
And it's the usual story, yeah, where the criminals are not going to be compliant anyway. So basically innocent people are being forced to jump through these hoops.
Yeah. Yeah, you had a question?
Not a question, but Mistress had asked,
I work for a financial institution, a brokerage, and we have to maintain all of our data for 6 or 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
We pay six figures a year to store data.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we grow, I'm having to remember math, it's too early. we grow 5 gigs a day, so that's
a lot.
Yeah.
No. I want to say it was like 2.6 terabytes a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have to store all that data for 7 years, and it grows at that rate. I mean, we spend enough on tapes to back stuff up to buy large, expensive foreign vehicles. So you have a legitimate business. What are you in business for? You're in business to make money. Well, if you have to spend, well, let's just say in excess of $100,000 a year to store all these images in this specially compliant way, now you're losing money. So why are you doing it?
Well, I think
it might be a legal way to force people out of the business.
That's exactly what it is.
Exactly.
So that's
why. And it's doing a good job. I mean, I said earlier, we've closed some of our sites down. And Prometheus, the magazine I was working with, stopped publication for a year while its lawyers tried to advise the board on what to do. Because we've got magazines going back 5 years now, and with the new regulations, we are still responsible for going back.
Actually, that was one of the. And I don't mean to cut you off, but that was one of the. That was one of the other things that the deputy attorney general came out and said that, you know, no, we're not going to make this retroactive. Now, that was just part of his terms again for this injunction hearing,
right? But they haven't settled that yet,
and it's probably. And I can guarantee they're not going to make this retroactive in the end.
If they do, there's a whole lot of people in trouble.
That's true. That's very true. But I don't think they're going to do it. I'd bet a paycheck on it.
Yeah, and I mean, small sites like mine's completely drastically changed. I have taken down whole galleries. I have taken down years' worth of pictures and things just because maybe one image on there wasn't compliant. And so, I mean, and mine's just free. How much of the internet are we losing because of this? I mean, it's like you said, a chilling effect on it.
It's really only affecting amateurs, to tell you the truth, and I don't mean to, you know. It's, for the most part, it's the amateurs that are mostly affected, and that's where it really becomes a free speech issue, because it burdens an amateur, someone that's not doing it for massive profits, that's not a major company. Those are the folks that's a free speech issue for. And unfortunately, those are also the same people that probably couldn't afford to buy a membership to the Free Speech Coalition. You know, because, I mean, that costs money. It's an advocacy group, so it costs money to get into those things. And so that's where you really get into the free speech issue. You know, a big company like Playboy or something like that, they've got money to burn. They'll always find a way to turn a profit. That's not a problem. And that's their only goal, is to turn a profit. Their goal isn't to protect free speech. Now, you could say that about guys like Larry Flint to some capacity, but, you know, for the most part, it's all about the money. And for the people that have smaller publications that really aren't out there just to make a killing, that's where you come into the real free speech issue.
Yeah, basically you have to be able to pay a huge amount of money in order to engage in sexual expression.
Yeah.
And so the way that's going to impoverish people like us, well, people like me who love internet porn, and all kinds of porn, is that you're going to get a really homogenous product. You're not going to have free sexual expression. You're going to have Playboy's view of sexuality. You're going to have Vivid Video's view of sexuality. You're not going to have alternative sexuality. You're not going to have, like, hot dykes wearing, like, cool outfits anymore. You're just going to have, like, the same old stuff. And, you know, and people like, you know, regular good Americans who want to, like, fuck on screen and let you watch are not going to be allowed to do it. And that's terrible.
One thing that goes back to what Ms. Mistress was talking about is that every single one of her clients that she has had video cast with their permission, she would have to provide documentation for each of her customers. Mm-hmm. Now, some people, if they are outed from the BDSM world, they can lose jobs, they can lose their families because of a stigma. To do this is tantamount to persecuting those of alternative lifestyles.
Well, I think it's not just tantamount. I think it is. I mean, I think it's very clear, and especially because of the aspect of sexually explicit being labeled.
It's not coming any closer.
We're having a mic issue. but the fact that sexually explicit includes a definition which just is sadistic or masochistic abuse, you know, you can really, any kind of BDSM image, even if it's just like, here's Mistress So-and-so holding her new flogger, that can qualify as something which is viewed as sexually explicit and therefore subject to these record-keeping requirements. That's so, again, even just sort of information about BDSM could be recategorized.
That's one of the reasons that the NCSF, the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom, joined forces with the
Free Speech Coalition
on July 5th. So if you were a member of the NCSF before July 5th, you were kind of grandfathered into the FSC.
And NCSF is doing a lot of other great things to protect us as well. There's other really good lawsuits they're involved with.
This cat over here had a question.
I was also wondering, what about the peer-to-peer community? If someone makes porn in
it's not covered.
Puts a torrent up on the internet.
That's exactly screwed. Why this is so silly, because you know the people that are producing child pornography and really illicit material, you know, bestiality and you know, shisa and all that other garbage. You know, it's you're not going to find it on legitimate websites. You're going to find it on Kaz or LimeWire or things like that, because they're not going to get anybody in the United States to distribute this stuff. And it doesn't even cover that. And that's one of the things. That's why this is really. And by the way, my opinions are mine and not ABN's. I want to say this. This is honestly a lot of saber rattling. This administration's nod to the religious right that got them in office. And honestly, I don't think these guys have any intention of getting this through the courts. I think this is an opinion, by the way, and I apologize. This is just something to say, hey, we tried, guys. We tried to get rid of porn. We didn't succeed, and we're sorry about that, but we really tried for you guys, so vote for
us next
time.
Don't pay any attention to what Scott's saying. Please cover your ass and get all of your paperwork in
order. Well, no, I'm not saying don't comply. I'm just saying,
you know, it may be true that they won't succeed with this, and I think you're right. I mean,
I don't think they have a prayer in hell.
Problems with it, but we are, as you pointed out, going to be tied up in court for a while. It's already having a chilling effect, and the thing is that the Bush administration and Gonzalez, you know, are both now going on a real offensive against obscenity in general, against consensual adult material. And so this is only one little piece of what's happening. There's also been, you know, a real upswing in obscenity prosecutions. There's also been, you know, this new guy was appointed. What's he called? Like the deputy director of obscenity or something?
Oh,
like
what's that name? He worked for Reagan. I forget his name.
I know, but what is his title? I want his title. He's like director of obscenity with the DOJ.
It's stupid. Yeah. There's basically an obscenity
czar that's been appointed by Bush to work with Gonzalez and really step up these kinds of prosecutions. So I think what we're seeing is, you know, from all angles, the government is trying to crack down on consensual adult sexual material, and it's kind of a movement away from going after child pornography. And going after sort of adult.
But they always love to wrap it. This is something I wrote about on Eye on Adult. Is they really love to wrap this in these shrouds of, you know, it's for the children or it's for safety.
It's always for the children.
And you know, and they'll push it down your gullet quicker than you could whistle
Dixie. Well,
that's
why 2257 is such an effective tool, because they can say it's all about protecting the children.
And it
even though,
do
as
a
we've
damn
already
thing.
Pointed out, what it's doing is this law is punishing people who want to obey the law. It's not punishing the real criminals. It's not punishing the people who are using Freenet to distribute, like, My Little Brother, blah, 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 or whatever. Ultimately, it really is just a way of scaring the crap out of people and keeping them from engaging in consensual adult behavior in front of other adults.
There's also the point from, like, my standpoint. I'm on online mud. People actually give me their depictions. How am I supposed to know where they got it from, who the distributor was, how old the model is, because this is voluntarily given to me. This is voluntarily given to me so that they can show what their character looks like in a visual format instead of just the textual format that a mud is.
Actually, can I ask a question? That brings up something really interesting. Have you ever, before this all came about, did you ever reject any images based on their content?
Yes, we have. Several people have sent in thinking that their depiction of, like, Sailor Moon would be appropriate. Sailor Moon does not look to be over 18, so it was outright rejected.
Okay.
But, you know, people do that. I mean, that's just an example.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they've got their hair in pigtails, and, you know, we've got it on file that they're 18 years old, but they look pretty young. So, no, we're not going to do that. Look more mature.
Can you just reject that as, like, a historical anachronism, too? Like, Sailor Moon didn't exist in Rome and stuff like that?
Yeah, true.
You can just sorry, no Sailor Moon in Rome.
I've been on two muds, but, you know. But, you know, you've got, you know, if they show, you know, the little itty-bitty prepubescent girl, you know, that was, you know, a Vestal virgin, that's too young. It's going to give us a bad name. The people are going to think, you know, ooh, I can go on SPQR and screw a kid. No. Please excuse my language. No, we do not want to portray that, but we can't. But with this law, we are asking people for their depictions, their own pictures, if they want to give them. We cannot go around to these people that are doing this and go, listen, we need you to send us a copy of your driver's license. Yeah, mail it to Germany. That's where our main office is.
Let me interject. I also, from what I've been reading, unless they've changed it, some of the stuff has been changed since it was first proposed, but it's also my understanding that you have to physically see the driver's license. They have to physically drive it to your offices in Germany, and you have to see it and copy it yourself. You can't just have them email you a file of it. That doesn't count.
Unless you're a secondary publisher.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's
secondary
kind of, yeah.
Producer.
So a secondary publisher can, but yeah, if you're a primary publisher, it's any government-issued ID, basically. So
and
photo ID.
They're also not accepting foreign. They're not.
You have to have a green card. So it's U.S. government issued.
Well, I was
so.
Going to say. I mean, this also goes into immigrant work laws and things like that. I mean, that's one of the little things they slipped in there to make this interesting. There's a lot of foreign performers that cannot perform here anymore because they do not have U.S. documents. They're here legally, but technically they're not supposed to work here, because they don't have, you know, the proper documentation. So this has also been a way to keep, you know, all the Czechoslovakian, all the German girl, you know, all the Romanian girls that come over here for, you know, 6 months, shoot a bunch of scenes and go back home. Now, what this does not cover, however, is shooting overseas. If you're a company and you say, okay, we're going to go over to Czech Republic, we're going to shoot for 3 weeks and, you know, take it all home. Technically, you don't really have to even be compliant with that anymore, even though they all do. Most they have GUFA laws, which I think is spelled GUFA. It's an acronym.
But when you bring it back, you have to be you have to be covered, because if you're going
if it was
to
produced on foreign soil, actually.
But when you distribute it in the U.S., as I understand it, you have to be covered as a secondary producer.
And that was one of the things
that
I read about.
I think it's on the NCSF website. They have a letter from the DOJ saying there's a blanket exemption for things produced on foreign soil.
Yeah, if I could hit the net here, I would be able to pull that up. I actually have there's a couple of documents saved. Yeah.
But production does not just mean shooting time. It is editing. It is sound. It is
on foreign soil.
Mm-hmm. It is all these other things. So if they bring back these rolls of film and they edit in the United States, now they're primary again.
If it was shot on foreign soil, you're not. You don't comply.
That's all. Yeah, I was going to say, and that's all dodgy at best. They haven't defined that.
Yeah, it's, again, it's one of these dodgy things
to come in because, as Annalise said, they don't need a warrant. They don't need a warrant.
Oh no, you have to be open to the public at least 20 hours a week. 40.
Yeah,
20. I mean, it's 20 now. 20. It used to be 40.
What about somebody like me?
Yeah.
Okay, my place of business, I haven't made a dime off of it, but my place of business is my home. So they can come into my home for up to 20, 40 hours a week anytime they want without a warrant.
Up to four times a year.
This is the U.S., okay? It's private property. But because I choose to share my tits with the world, it no longer applies to me.
And if you want to protect your privacy and safety, you'd have to really rent an office somewhere else to have that information.
And be there.
You can't just rent an office. Be there 20 hours a week or pay someone to be there, right? Because, of course, you can afford that.
And what's really spooky is that's probably one of the sections of this law that's not going to be shot down.
That was in the original law, too. I mean, this is an
They defined it a little more properly, though. They did go into more detail, and that was the 20 hours, and that was the separate space. Like, for instance, if you have, you have to have a room dedicated to it. That's something we're going through right now.
A PO box was acceptable.
Yeah, it has to be a physical address.
Bank deposit box was acceptable.
Yeah, and they used to just say reasonable working hours, now they've defined that as
20 hours.
Which,
that's something interesting right there. What the hell are reasonable working hours?
8 to 6, Monday through Saturday. Excuse me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's the thing. For a company like ours, AEBN all but runs 24 hours a day. First, we're always broadcasting. Second, we've got people on, John, we've got people on staff until 3 a.m., right? It's 24 hours now. We've got people on staff up there, 24 hours a day. So, if
the Tess Association is a non-for-profit educational BDSM support group. We don't have an office.
Yeah.
We don't exist. We meet in a rented space twice a week. We just happen to publish a magazine. Our custodian of records is a board of directors member, his house.
Yeah.
Like yours.
Yeah, and they can show up,
Yeah, he's real happy about having his full name and address printed in every publication.
So there's no exemption for a 501c3 or anything like that?
No. So again, like we were saying before, this is supposed to only apply to commercial enterprises, but the term commercial has been really, really capaciously defined. So it's very broad. It's not clear how they're going to apply it. And so if you were just being a nonprofit would certainly not exempt you. And then, like I said, if you were selling anything, like selling T-shirts or anything like that,
memberships to the association.
Yeah, so they might be able to deem you commercial in that case. So, again, I mean, it really is a very effective harassment tool. So as long as they decide not to go after your publication or your site, you're fine. If they decide to, they can make your life hell in many, many ways. They can show up at your place o' business, which may be your house. They can request all these records. They can delve into the personal lives of your many employees or the people that are your performers. It's really a big sort of grab bag of tricks that they can use to harass you.
If you have any questions, my personal suggestion would be get a lawyer and just make sure that you're in the clear. Because if you don't have your files in order, you can be held liable. If you happen to have your model releases in with your Title 18 documentation, you're in trouble. That's a violation and can land you in federal prison.
And if you can't find a lawyer, certainly you can contact the Free Speech Coalition. You can contact the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
NCSF.
These are groups that NCSF, they can put you in touch with lawyers that will do it pro bono or that will do it for a reasonable rate. We've certainly had a lot of calls at EFF about this, and we've put people in touch with lawyers. So definitely don't feel like you're alone or there's nothing you can do. And
do you? A lot of this sound like they're not only stepping on, they're stepping on your civil liberties, the ACLU. And I'm trying to think, what effect will this have on, say, your bookstores, which put stuff
huge
out, the Barnes and Nobles and the Borders, of which there are more of that. And the great one, how the hell are the libraries going to comply?
Yeah.
Well, they don't. It's not the library that actually, because they're not public making the publication. If you own a store,
and they are some of them, a lot of libraries now will also sell your books, sell books if they're used.
You're right.
Selling used, you know, just used
well, books. It's not the seller's responsibility. It is the publisher's responsibility. So that's not
but
really.
They're
the,
still going to need. It sounds like to me they're still
no.
going to need.
No, an adult bookstore will not have to have these records,
okay.
Or a library will not have to have these records. They are merely the seller. It's if you are a publisher, if you are the publisher of the material or the creator of the material, or you are rebroadcasting it in some form or duplicating
it. But
there
are some
it.
Weird ways that this is going to come up, and I think what you were bringing up with people sending you pictures, I think one of the other places that this has come up is with swingers magazines, mm-hmm. where people post... send in pictures of themselves that are posted in the back of the magazine or pasted into the back of the magazine. There's actually a case that's been going on for several years about this one swingers magazine called Connections being sued under 2257 because they haven't kept the records of all the people who were naked in the back of their magazine. So, or who were depicted in some kind of sexual embrace in the back of their magazine. So even if you're this very small amateur magazine, you know, publishing pictures sent into you by amateur people in the neighborhood just wanting to hook up with other swingers, you can be liable.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that for a second.
Well, you look at certain websites that are online. Some of them have free memberships that have limited abilities. You can't see certain movies. You can't see certain pictures. And people will post a profile saying, hey, I want to meet XXX for YYY and ZZZ. And
ooh, ZZZ.
If you've got a free membership, you've already attested that you are of age. At this point, you would have to physically go to their offices for your little profile and hand them your driver's license.
Well, I mean,
and
think
have
about
your information for I want to hook up for public consumption.
Yeah. I mean, think about Adult Friend Finder. Think about MySpace. Now, MySpace, you can't post nude pictures there right now, and as it is exactly why. But, you know, Adult Friend Finder and these various services of this sort.
Alt.com.
Yeah. Alt.com. You know, all of these sites really could technically be subject to this. Now, users submitted things. It's funny. I can't believe they didn't address this in this. In this law with user-submitted materials. And because that's the one, I mean, we were talking about as an add-on to Ion Adult was, you know, putting together something like, you know, whowantstobeapornstar.com or something like that. You know, where, you know, people who want to get into the adult industry can send us pictures. We throw them up there and then, you know, the modeling agencies, you know, out west or wherever in Florida can, you know, look and say, hey, that girl's really hot. I'd like to put her in my movies. And, you know, but if we do something like that, you know, they're going to have to be, you know, just straight photos. I mean, you know, swimsuit or, you know, lingerie or something like that. You know, we're not going to be able to show anything. And, you know, I work in porno.
Yeah.
And it's silly. There is a bit of, you know, I can see this to some capacity why a website should be able to be held liable simply on the basis that, you know, I could send her picture into Who Wants to Be a Porn Star, and that's not right. And, you know, there has to be some type of verification there, as, you know. Of course, you could do something like that in the back of a magazine or anything like that. It's done all the time.
But as we've been saying, if you were really hell-bent on doing that and you were going to be doing something that was criminal or privacy-invading anyway, so you just make up something. You just create a fake driver's license for her and you say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm her.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, really, again, we're back to the fact that these laws only punish the law-abiding and the innocent, not the criminals.
Another thing I wanted to quick point out, because a lot of you in this room may be thinking that, well, this isn't going to affect me because I don't have a webcam site, and I don't run a magazine, and I don't, I'm not in the adult industry. What if you publish, what if you're out and you get an image that you want to put on your blog? You know, and what if you run a Yahoo group and somebody puts a sexually explicit content in your files or your photos section? You're responsible for that, the way I understand it. So, you know, just your average somebody running a Yahoo group could technically be held liable for this. You know, it's really some scary stuff.
Yeah, I was talking to a woman who is the former webmaster at Suicide Girls, and she was saying that they've had to take down some of the user profile pictures because they're not, you know, they're not women who are associated with the site. They're just users, and they don't have their information in there.
Yeah, I run 5 Yahoo groups, and I had to go through. Basically, I deleted every single photo in my photos and told everybody that unless the photos were completely clothed, they could not post pictures, which is ridiculous because they're 4 adult sites.
Yeah.
4 adult lists. So
this law is really a way of recreating old taboos about nudity and about sexuality. You know, all these people who spent all this time getting comfortable enough to put their nude photos on the internet and to put their themselves out there, now here's another way that they're going to be punished for it. So
this has actually never been enforced. 2257, as far as, you know, the original version of it, basically just said that if you're producing material, then, yeah, you've got to have the IDs and all that.
Actually, that's not true. The Connections case that I mentioned before is a 2257 case.
Okay.
So, and that's the Swingers magazine.
I guess, okay. I do remember hearing about that, but I haven't heard it as far as, like, on the adult video end that I'm aware of.
I wanted to ask if there was anything else, but that's the only thing you know about.
That's the only thing that I know about. So
it's mostly a chilling effects issue right now.
It's a chilling effects issue, but because of this new... this new regulation that's been issued, it's clear that they have much clearer rules, much easier to enforce them because they're much more well-defined. And so I think we are about to see more enforcement. And Gonzalez has said, you know, obscenity is incredibly high on his list of priorities. So we can definitely expect that this is kind of the prelude to, you know, possibly some prosecution under this law.
If you're posting any Abu Ghraib photos on your site, you have to get the driver's licenses of all those Iraqi torture victims.
Absolutely. Yeah, actually, there was...
That would consider BDSM.
Yeah, yeah, the Abu Ghraib photos would absolutely fit under this.
It's okay to torture Iraqis, just don't take pictures and put it on your site.
Well, don't, and especially if there's some sexual nature or... Yeah.
just don't take any pictures.
Yeah, no pictures of torture.
You know, you brought up the obscenity issue, and... you know, that's really interesting as well, because normally, with the exception of Extreme Associates, which was they're prosecuting, that's still going on in Western Pennsylvania.
Although we got a great ruling on that case.
Yeah, although Rob Black is scum. I just want to say that. He is. He is
scum, but
he's an asshole.
This is a great... you can't always have the best plaintiff in the universe.
Well, that's true.
Best defendant.
I mean, this is a guy, he went on Frontline on PBS. I'll just give you a quick background. Went on Frontline on PBS and basically said, "Hey, Ashcroft, come get me." And which is why the guy is not very well liked in the adult industry. And so he really did kind of bring, I mean, he challenged these guys.
And in a way, like I said, I mean, you can't choose your defendants all the time, but he really did. I mean, the result of the case was very interesting.
Yeah.
His website.
Well, it's not over yet.
It's not over yet. It's being appealed. But it was him and his wife that do the site, right?
Yeah.
It's just a mom and pop site, but it has lots of...
Well, not really. They have a lot more backing than they've been in the industry for a long time.
Okay, so I shouldn't say. The two of them run it, and it's a lot of extreme stuff. There's like piss and...
Well,
I thought it was like the reason why it was found obscene was because it wasn't just... It's not just fucking. It's like extra stuff too.
Well, yeah, exactly. And well, I mean, the title...
What do you really consider extra stuff?
Well, anything other than PV sex and, you know, penis vagina sex for those of you who PV
this,
sex.
The one that the title that really got the feds' attention was Forced Entry. I mean, it was essentially, you know, a simulated rape film. Which for the most part, you know, if you have any brains, you're not going to be distributing this anyway, especially if you're quasi-mainstream like Extreme Associates were, despite their name. They really were a quasi-mainstream company.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were big enough that they were able to catch attention.
And
I was going to say, the great thing, though, that came out of the case is that we got a ruling that they were not obscene and that, in fact, the obscenity laws, as they stand, are unconstitutional.
Yeah, which is the Miller test.
Which is a weird moment. It's like Eastern Pennsylvania District Court or something.
Yeah, and that's the reason why the feds decided to take it there, is because they figured that, you know, there's no way in hell that, you know, in rural Pennsylvania they'd get a judgment against them.
Okay, in New York City, we just lost a case, Barbara Nikki
versus
Ashcroft, and they found her, they gave her a preliminary decision of her stuff would be considered obscene.
What was it? What was the material?
She's a photographer, BDSM,
it was a BDSM
photographer.
It was BDSM? Okay.
Yeah, it's just S&M.
They refused to grant her a preliminary injunction on the law she would have been prosecuted.
I see.
Because she was challenging. She was also challenging the obscenity provisions of the CDA, and she was challenging them constitutionally. So she was saying across the board, this law is unconstitutional. And they said, well,
you know, we can't prove that it's unconstitutional across the board. They had a very high and weird bar for providing evidence for that. But they did say that she had reason to be concerned that her work might be, that there might be an unconstitutional chilling of her expression, so that her work would be found obscene. So it was kind of, it was a weird decision. And it is being appealed to the Supreme Court.
So it's bad news for us.
It's very bad news, and I think the Supreme Court is not going to be cheerful about obscenity.
would anybody like to explain the Miller test?
Sure.
Would you like to do that? Because you're pretty...
I will happily explain the Miller test. The Miller test is our current definition of obscenity coming from the Supreme Court, and it's basically... there's a three-prong test, and it has to do, largely it revolves around, you know, whether it contains, whether it's considered obscene, which is sexually explicit material or I can never pronounce it, basically shit, excrecatory material. And it's in the eyes of the community. So it has to be based on community standards. So is it? So the first prong is it obscene in the eyes of the community? And then what are, do you want
to? I think the second one, and the reason I asked you to do it is because I can't remember all
three of
them.
I can't remember the second one.
The second one, I believe, is.
Oh, yeah, is it? Sexual conduct. Yeah, no, it must be obscene. The second one is, does it arouse the prurient interest?
Prurient interest.
Yeah, the first one. No, the first one is it obscene? In other words, does it depict sexual or excrecatory?
Yeah, it doesn't make it obscene in and of itself. It has to make
That's
why it's three pronged. Yeah. So the first prong is it sexually explicit? So the second one is, does it appeal to the prurient interest, which is, does it make you horny? And the third one is, does it contain no scientific, literary, artistic value?
Socially redeeming
features.
Like
like a plot, or that's why when you look at like late 60s nudie films after we got the Miller test, you'll see like basically the whole film is just people romping and having sex, but the film will start with a scientist saying, well, from this film we can learn a lot about the ways of the nudists, and so that's your scientific value. So passes the test.
There's another good example in all of this, and the mainstreaming of porn is what has helped legitimize it. You know, for the past, I would say probably about, we're 2005 now, maybe about 10, 15 years, the adult industry has been relatively legitimized. You know, it's not that big a deal. You know, especially with the proliferation of the internet. So you've got that, and that's really what has regulated the industry more than anything, because they want to make money, and the best way to do that is to play ball.
Yeah, and the other thing too, and I mean the important part about those prongs, the first piece of that test, is that it's all about community standards. So it's kind of based on the old world of pornography where it was print. So you could sort of have one town that banned Playboy magazine, but another town that
or
didn't.
Or wouldn't have the movie theater in town. That
right, it wouldn't have the movie theater, wouldn't have the Extreme Associates magazine. However, now that we're in the world of the internet, you know, it's very hard to talk about community standards of what's obscene, because who is your community?
It's a global community.
Yeah, I mean, is it New York? Is it Atlanta?
Well, and I think that's what Nikki was trying to get a decision on.
That's right. No, that was exactly, and that was what was sort of tragic, was that basically the judge said, well, you know, you have reason to be worried that some communities would find your work obscene, but we can't really make a determination that every site like yours would be considered obscene in some place. So we can't really prove that free speech will be chilled enough to really overturn this law.
Well, but I mean, clearly there is, in their wildest fantasies, there's no way the NCSF could really believe that they were going to get a court decision that rendered the concept of obscenity in the U.S. like thrown out, because that's what that would have done.
It would have thrown it out.
Community standard, then there's no way to make a basis for that. So it doesn't exist.
So basically, what they were trying to do was not try to get the idea of obscenity thrown out. In fact, all they were doing was challenging the constitutionality of having the obscenity laws used on the internet. So they were saying this standard that we have based on community standards. of decency and of obscenity doesn't make sense on the internet. So this should be thrown out. They're not saying, you know, all obscenity law should be thrown out. They're simply saying it doesn't make sense in the context of the internet, and that is unconstitutional because so many people, because if I make my little porn site in San Francisco that's like full of happy butt-fucking homos, like I have to be worried, right? Because in San Francisco I can say that and everybody's like, yay, happy butt-fucking homos. you know, maybe here in this room I can say that because our community standards in this room encompass that as a happy, lovely thing.
I'm a Baptist.
I know. A couple people are a little offended, but when I put that site up on the internet, I have to be worried that I could be prosecuted for obscenity in every other place in the world that isn't so happy about my fucking homosexuals. So that was what she was challenging, was she was saying that this was, that fear of prosecution was unconstitutional. It was chilling her speech.
So don't you think the better way to go about that might be to try and get the internet declared a community of its own? I mean, that's the precedent they're really looking for. Say that the community standard of the internet is the internet, and that that's not going to keep a local town from...
Well, actually, you know, they're trying to do something of the sort with the top-level domains, and I'm sure you've read about this with the .xxx domain, top-level domain, which is a joke, but this is one of the ways that they're trying to do this, where they say, okay, you know, .xxx, this is a way for people to, you know, if ISPs want to block it, ISPs can block it. If you want to block it out of your home, you can. It's just a way, it's just another way for them to, one, it's another free speech issue, because it kind of creates a ghetto effect for anybody doing anything adult.
Yeah.
But it's being done under the guise of, well, this is a way for us to create a community specifically for this, and again, protect children and all that other rigmarole.
It is for the children. We're taking away your ability to express yourself for the children.
So, like, for instance, you know, with the .xxx domain, somebody like Mistress here, you know, who runs a cam site, now, as it stands now, if they do manage to push this through, I think they only have one more process to go through in order to get it approved, finally.
It's actually been approved by ICANN.
Yeah.
It's just that the U.S. government has said, please slow down.
Yeah.
We want you to... Which is like a whole other issue, because why is the U.S. government allowed to say what kind of top-level domains we have throughout the world?
Well, they've gotten pressure from a lot of different governments, but you know, that's the U.S. has put the most pressure in because I think it's based in San Francisco, isn't it?
It's in Silicon Valley.
Okay.
Or no, actually, I think it's in San Diego now. Okay. Anyway, whatever. So it's in California.
But somebody like Mistress here, she would probably be expected to register a .xxx domain instead of her .com. And the concern with this is that, you know, for eventually it's not going to be voluntary anymore. It's going to be mandatory. And that's really a free speech issue there.
And the .xs, once again, they cost more money. And they're talking about slapping a special tax on them.
Yeah.
So, oh, yeah, the 25% porn tax, that'll never happen.
Yeah, you're basically, your little free sites like mine that I think provide a service to certain, you know, I mean, I don't think I'm doing like a humanitarian effort or anything because I'm showing my tits. But, you know, there are people who can't afford to join AVN.
Right.
Or pay a membership fee, and they come to my site for my little 15-second refresh of my tits. You know, I mean, those sites, which have been a staple on the internet for years, are going to go away. And you are not going to be able to see them. The only way you're going to be able to see the stuff is to join a site like ABN and pay a lot of money.
And you're not going to get. I think we and you're not going to get deals. Mistresses kind of. You know, you're not going to get sort of the kind of like love and care and, you know, personal investment that someone like Mistress puts into her porn. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, but like homemade porn is often it's much more passionate and it's much more heartfelt. And it's like, you know, everybody, it's better, you know, or at least, you know, you want to be able to have access to both. It's like you can have like the fake orgasms in a Vivid video, or you can have like the real orgasms in a homemade video. You know, it's like, your pick.
The amateurs make the professionals what they are. You know, it's only all pros, then you have nothing to compare them to. The amateurs make it real. They make it dirty. They make it raw. And That's really hot.
And let's face it, they're just hotter, okay? They're just hotter.
Well, you know, honestly, I can say, though, in defense of the big industry, things have changed quite a bit. And there is actually, and this is off topic, and I apologize. I'll make this very quick. The adult industry is learning from the amateur community. They really are. And, you know, the days of, you know, the big fake tits and the big blonde hair is all but over. The Jenna Jamesons of the world are all but dinosaurs, and now the girls that are stars are the girls that look like that chick in the grocery store that you really wanted to nail. And you know, that's and again, this is the legitimizing of porn in America. This goes back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
You know, as the people become more and more okay with it and are able to consume it, the more realistic and the less harmful it actually becomes. Somebody's always going to go overboard, though.
And yet the more persecuted it becomes.
Yeah.
Well, only by one party.
The party in power.
Shouldn't you guys be trying to normalize it, basically? I mean, why they basically, you've got the right wing are basically trying to say this is what it's done to the industry, so we need to attack this particular portion of it.
In a manner of speaking, I mean, it's
the danger of growing is.
Well, they're scared of sex. Honestly, I mean, you know, it does go into votes. It does go into the fact that, you know, a lot of the Republican constituency are, you know, a lot of folks out in middle America that are, you know, really hung up. And I'm sorry?
They need to get laid.
Cold.
Yeah.
They're jealous.
Well, honestly,
well, it's
I mean,
a quick way to get votes, you know, and it is a quick way to look like you're kind of on the side of the moral majority. But it's also, I mean, it's the classic situation of it's easy to go after a group that has very little protection in the first place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's the other thing is it's a very easy target. Well, so it's quick sort of moral cachet, but then the group that you're persecuting – it's hard for them to fight back. And when they do try to fight back, they wind up saying things like what we're saying here, which is like, well, amateur porn is hotter. And that's not necessarily a very sympathetic platform politically, even though we all know in our hearts that it's true. It's very difficult to articulate that in a way that's political, that makes sense to voters.
And those are the cats that are always getting taken down, too. I mean, when was the last time you heard about a really major company other than Extreme Associates that were in serious legal hot water? It's been a long time. And, you know, but when you hear about an obscenity case, it's, you know, as it may turn our stomachs, it's usually, you know, some husband and wife in West Virginia that, you know, are having a bit too much fun with their bowel movements. But it's true. These are the cats that are being taken down for obscenity. You know, I don't much care for it, but frankly, they're not harming each other and they're not harming anybody else. But they have no protection. Larry Flint has protection, Rob Black has protection, you know, all these cats, they have protection. They're not going to go after them because they are the ones that will set precedents against the government.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, that mom and pop from West Virginia, they don't have a prayer in hell because they're just going to take the plea and take the 6 months in jail instead of the 10 and get out of Dodge.
We've also got the idea here of, if you remember back a few years ago, people using news groups. If you have the .XXX sites and the net is sanitized, the moral majority can place pressure on your cable company, on your ISP, to eliminate it completely.
Mm-hmm. It's a ghetto effect. Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
You're right.
And so you have the sanitization of the internet where even finding information, such as, say, the Kama Sutra or... You know,
or just sex education.
Sex education. You want to talk about breast cancer? Well, breast is an offensive word, so it's sanitized from the net. Thank you. I found a lump in my breast. I'm going to die now. Yeah. It is a. It's going back to the dark ages where women had vapors.
Well, I would like to put this in perspective, though. We all know that this country works on a pendulum effect. Right now, things are looking really bad, but most likely, I'm not going to say at the next election or necessarily the next, but there is going to be a swing in the opposite direction. And we've all been alive long enough to see one or two of these. When I was a kid, you know, I sat there and I watched Reagan with his obscenity task force. You know, he went crazy with this. That's the same guy that they pretty much added as the obscenity czar was a guy that worked for Reagan. And then, you know, Bush Senior was kind of a lame duck. And then we had, you know, 8 years of Clinton, where it doesn't matter what the hell you do, you know, you know, you can do whatever the hell you want. And then again, it swings back. So I don't really feel like that we're in desperate, desperate trouble, because this doesn't, but for right now, until that changes again, you do have to watch yourself and you do have to be compliant and,
join the NCSF or the FSC, yeah. Support them, talk to your congressman, lobby, be out.
I think what happens is that they layer on each other wrong. The Republicans come up with, you know, a pornography approach that will chill free speech. And then the Democrats come in and they extend it off into something else. They may not go after pornography.
Or they don't enforce it.
Into a different area entirely using the same precedent. Yeah.
That's a good point. Well, again, it also kind of goes into archaic laws as well. It's like there's a lot of stuff on the books that aren't enforced anymore. And, you know, for a while there, for those 8 years with Clinton, there wasn't a single obscenity prosecution, if I remember correctly.
I don't know.
I don't remember a single one.
They didn't enforce it at all.
So it's just all depending. It all depends on whether or not they want to enforce it as well.
Well, they went after him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but exactly. It wasn't on videotape. And that's the difference. Yeah.
I was just going to say, you know, you can't really ever relax on it. I don't think the fear of sex is particularly specific to one side or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I think they fear it in different ways. Like for me, this law made me take down some websites.
Right.
But laws that came through when Clinton was in office make me worried about fucking a girl I pick up in a bar.
Right.
You know, I mean, one is deciding what I can say, but the other one is potentially putting me in jail with. I didn't know she was drunk before. So some people want to keep me from talking about it, but it seems to me that the other side spends more time keeping me from actually doing it.
Right.
Yeah. And I was just thinking, a lot of people, what you were saying earlier, a lot of people think this doesn't apply to them. Like you said, you know, and I'm worried about what affects me right now. They're putting this out there as like, oh, we're going to take the perverts off the internet. We're going to protect the children. Mm-hmm. But it's not the perverts that need to be concerned. I mean, it's like you and your wife wanting to explore something alternative in the privacy of your own home, and you can't do that anymore because you can't go to a website that tells you what to do or how to do it. It's going to end up with people hurting themselves, and it's not just going to be the perverts that are affected. It's going to be everybody.
Well, you kind of bring up an interesting point about the language that they use. You know, you can't really educate yourself on this because the language is ridiculous. It's like, you know, in 2256 where they bring up the whole thing of the lascivious display of the genitals. Do you know what the definition of lascivious is? Wanton. What's the definition of wanton? I don't have it in front of me, but you know, it's stupid. There's no specific language, and they do it that way so that the law is malleable to their own needs.
Yeah, so that they can basically at any point claim that something is a lascivious display. But that's the interesting thing about 2256, because the law was designed for dealing with child porn.
Right.
So it was supposed to be talking about when you have an image of a kid who's naked, how do you sort of distinguish between, you know, just someone taking a picture of their kid in the pool versus someone doing it for lascivious reasons, right? Yeah. So that's why they have that language in there, and it makes a little bit more sense when you think of it in that context, but then to apply it in 2257 for adult consensual stuff, it's like, well, anybody who's showing their pussy online, you know, well, kind of lascivious.
And that brings up, you know, another question.
Of course,
there.
I only show mine in a chaste way, completely. You know?
Well, I mean,
tasteful, okay. Not lascivious.
Well, I mean, and that's, you know, and that brings up something else. You know, it's, you know, being that it's supposed to be actual sexually explicit content. Now, if you're pinching a nipple, is that masturbation? Is that a sex act? I don't know.
I would say that if you're pinching, I think that's S&M.
Yeah, yes.
But I mean,
think
if you're pinching your own nipple, we'll say that. Is that masturbation?
Still sadistic.
Okay.
That is
but see, that's the thing.
No, and that's actually
masochism.
Yeah, that's actually one of the obscenity prosecutions that's going on right now. It's against a website. I think it's called slaveworld.com or World of Slaves. But basically, it's just a lot of pictures of women in bondage gear.
Mm-hmm.
And they're being, yay, but they're being prosecuted for obscenity because of the fact that it's, you know, just being in the bondage gear is considered sadistic or masochistic. I guess masochistic.
That's so odd because there is so much BDSM material out there.
It is so scary. I mean, to participate in any kind of S&M activity, you really risk prosecution. And not just depiction. I mean, to actually do it. I'm wearing a collar. This is bondage. That means a cop could arrest me for assaulting myself. It's very weird, but that's the laws. That's how they are.
Another thing that scares me about this is the fact that they can pick and choose who they're going to prosecute, which means what if, say, for example, I have a blog and a website that shows my tits. Well, I put on my blog, you know, the president sucks or, you know, something like that. Then the Secret Service comes and they use 2257 to take my website off. And they're not doing it to get my tits off the internet. They're doing it to get my opinion off the internet. And I don't think that that's right either. I just think that
Well, that's very slippery slope, free speech. That's just
but that's what they're
scary.
Attacking with this. And mom and pop in average America think they're just going after the perverts.
We also
well, average America thinks they're going after the mainstream porn.
Yeah.
You know, when they hear about this on the news, they're not thinking about, you know, the couple down the street that are swingers and also have a webcam. When people think of pornography in America, that's not what they're thinking of.
They're thinking about the dirty bookshop
on
the corner down
Wilkinson Boulevard
downtown.
In Charlotte, North Carolina.
Or they're thinking, again, back to our earlier theme, they're thinking that it's protecting the children, right? So they don't even really have in their mind who this is going to go after. What this is doing is cleaning up all those dirty places that have all those underage boys and girls in their movies.
Yeah.
And maybe they do think that's Vivid Video, or maybe they think it's, you know, some tiny website. I don't think they know, but I definitely think that that's what people see. They don't realize what it means to keep all these records and how it's going to affect their access to information later on.
It's going to be terribly burdensome and boring. Can I tell you how boring Midtown Manhattan is now that Giuliani came in and cleaned up the streets? It's dull. It doesn't smell like urine anymore. It's just, it's not New York.
Yeah, I personally, I remember 43rd Street and
I can do without the urine smell. That's okay with me.
We all forget, though, how
clean
easy it
strip
is
clubs.
To pass
That's
a
good.
Law bolstered on misinformation that it is to get it repealed.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Getting a law repealed practically takes an act of God, or God's whatever your theology is. So it's practically impossible to do that, but it's easier to pass a law and say, let's get the perverts,
mm-hmm. yeah.
without thinking about the other people that may be hurt.
Hi there. I'm a little late, so if I'm repeating anything that someone else said, just shoot me down. But one of the things I've noticed over the past 10 years is when the common person got access to the internet, that allowed them to connect with diverse groups of people with different interests. And where individual cities didn't have enough of a population to support, you know, far out interests, the internet did have that ability for people to have critical mass. Additionally, as a result of that, with cheap cameras, digital and video, and the ability for anyone to just write a story, erotic literature or whatnot, the average person could participate in the production of pornography, whereas they couldn't do that before that. There just wasn't, you know,
It was there, actually. The availability was there, just not to.
But, you know, like in the 70s, you know, you didn't have the ability. I mean, it took, like, you know, the guy from Hogan's Heroes, you know, like, you needed to have advanced technology, you know, to record this stuff, and not everyone had access to it. Now anyone can do it. Literally anyone can do it because they feel like it. And because anyone could do it and more people were participating in it, it became more acceptable because, you know, like half the time the person down the street was doing something, you know, they were writing stories or whatever. Over the past 5 years, I've noticed a few sort of chilling effects. The first big one was the visa fee, when you couldn't accept any payment at all unless you coughed up $750.
Yeah.
And if you're a serious...
I'm still boycotting. I only use MasterCard.
Well, see, that's the thing. It's like, you know, if, you know, like a serious business, like, you know, that has like thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, to just throw wherever, you know, they go, okay, another cost of production, whatever. But if you're, you know, like a 19-year-old girl who's thinking, hey, you know, I want to give this a shot, whatever, that's a huge barrier. I mean, that's you know, and so that stopped a lot of people from getting involved with it. And now the worst thing about the 2257 regulations I'm seeing now isn't so much, you know, they could never, ever enforce it. But the fact that that hammers over there, over everyone's head, that's intimidated a lot of people out of it. And so you have something where, you know, it's like, okay, I want to get naked on the net. There may be social consequences. I'm willing to deal with that. But now, like, I can't afford it. Okay, fine. I'm willing to deal with it. Now I go to jail for 5 years if I don't alphabetize my own ID, you know, properly.
Yeah.
And so that's the thing that really personally freaks me out about it, because, you know, it's a drag, because, like, the less people who'll feel comfortable getting in the ring and trying it out for themselves, you now have a reversal of the last 10 years, because if less people are doing it, then it becomes less acceptable behavior because, you know, less people are doing it, and then it just goes around this death spiral. So that's all I wanted to add in. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, and
good
I think
point.
That
thank
that's
you.
We need to wrap up, but I think that that's part of the basic point that we've all been making up here, is that what we're going to see is an evaporation of a lot of sexual expression, both in online and offline publications. And what that's going to result in is an impoverishment in general of people's knowledge about sexuality, their comfort level with different kinds of sexuality, their ability to learn about what they want sexually and being comfortable with that. So I think it is going to cause a lot of, you know, widespread social effects that we can't necessarily, you know, sort of predict right now. But I think it will definitely chill people's ability to express themselves sexually, but also their comfort level with sexual material.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.